fighting pretty much nonstop for about 6 hours.
I thought you were going to be in the recording booth today.
I was in the recording booth for the first part of the day, and then I went back to work and wrote quests all day. Oh.
You wrote a quest?
Quests?
Plural.
Yes.
Like, just, like, getting gold, killing trolls.
Well, you do know that's what I do for a living, so yes, essentially.
I like the idea that he writes mini quests. They're just sort of like someone goes to Whataburger.
Wait, how are there trolls with pirates?
There are trolls in everything.
Yeah, it's a rule.
Oh,
okay. It's the internet. Whatever you do, they're going to show up eventually.
Aww.
Hey, say goodbye.
I'm glad I recorded that. Because we are recording.
No, hey.
I know.
Sorry.
You guys are still not seeing that train coming down obvious Tunnel Mountain.
This time I just faced the microphone just in case.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Because you don't know. Welcome to the... Well, I was about to say the lead.
I know, right? Like, it's hard to not do that.
You want
to
get sued?
We get sued.
The original
gentleman. Episode 21, I think it is. No.
Oh, okay. Actually counted.
We're allowed to be drinking.
Yeah, we are. Yeah,
nice. So
now that we're 21, we can drink whatever we want, as opposed to all those other episodes when we were stone cold sober. We have a lot of cool stuff to talk to you about this week, a lot of cool comic books to talk to you about, a few movies. But first off, you've been wondering where Ashley's been. Well, I'll tell you, she was in darkest Africa.
Africa!
No, Ashley came back with gifts, namely Ebola.
Yeah.
So this will be the last episode, I think.
Aww. You know what? I had my time here.
She's not a good runner.
I did a jog. A constitutional. Yeah, it was actually kind of weird because the only thing I knew about Africa, I learned from Blended or Chris Rock.
Ah.
It turns out, no. Well, it wasn't like Blended. Adam Sandler wasn't there, but Chris Rock is right. It's fucking far. It's far. It is a 16-hour plane ride.
That is a long plane ride. That's longer than I would want to go for, like, armed crazy people and things that like to kill you.
Yeah, don't you miss a birthday if you travel that long?
You do. I approaching the speed of light, I aged.
Yeah.
And then on the way back, lost that time.
Wow. So yeah. When you left, you were like 35, and now you're like back to your
age. It's the same principle as Christopher Reeve flying around the world.
Yeah, basically. I'm going back to the future just by sitting here, which is pretty awesome.
Did they have roads?
So when you went back, it was still colonial. It's a good time to be a white person in Africa.
You know, the funny thing about that is it's awkward. Yeah, like when I was in Botswana,
sorry,
I was just
about
in the bush.
That whole, you know, like ruling your country without your consent thing.
Yeah, well, we got to mostly blame that on the Brits, and I was like, I'm with you guys.
No, the you know who were real assholes? The Belgians. Who knew? Real assholes.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, they were so drunk on their own beer, relatively easy to kick out. So.
That's funny. Apparently, King Leopold sobered up when they went, oh my god, what did I do last night? Oh, I fucked over the entire continent of Africa. I really shouldn't have done shots with Cecil Rhodes.
Wow.
Look it up, kids.
I see what people talk about me.
That's right, I'm 32. Bo is not. he's got a few years on me.
Yes, I actually knew King Leopold and Cecil Rhodes.
He said, welcome to the doctor to the podcast. So where were you in Africa?
I was mostly in Botswana, which, to answer your question, yes, they have roads. No, they're not paved. Yes, they're covered in impala. No, you should not journey on them without a guide.
It is the most popular car.
Yeah, Chevy
it
impalas?
Is. Oh, yeah, they all had rims.
Oh, fair enough.
Racist. No, I mean, we didn't go anywhere without a guide who, like, grew up as a herdsman and, like, spoke four languages and could, like, hunt hippos and make fire from twigs. Yeah.
You had the whole Crocodile Dundee experience.
Yeah, dude, he was badass. Yeah, like, I always kind of realized I was kind of a giant pussy, so I'd sit at home and I read comic books. You guys have no idea. There were, like, people out there doing shit. when they were young.
That's fine. They can do that. Yeah. That still allows me more time to drink beer and read comics.
I'm glad somebody's doing
that. Yeah, you know, what's funny is I did ask him, I was like, so if something were to happen and me and these assholes got stuck out here without you, like, what's the best thing we could do to, like, survive the night? Just the night in the book.
Die quickly? Was that the answer?
The smirk.
Do not prolong.
Go take your own lives.
Go tease the lions.
The smirk on his face said that, but his words... His words said, build a fire. Build the biggest fire you can.
Oh, Miss Ashley, you would not survive long enough for the night to fall.
Well, that's what's funny. The reason he told me to build a fire was because people would likely see it.
I suggest you immolate yourself, man.
That's pretty good, though. You know, yeah, make it easy for people to find your corpse.
I just see, exactly. I see that blank stare moment where she's like, and how do I do that?
He can make fire from twigs.
The rhinoceros will come and try to put the fire out and will inevitably kill you.
Oh my God, just handed me a cyanide pill.
The gods must be crazy, Reverend.
No, I know you can make fire from sticks in cartoons, but
it turns out there are, like, men can do that. They're doing it in Africa right now. But yeah, no, I mean, I can't. But and they can in cartoons. No one else knows how to do that.
That's odd. So you thought you would be just as good at rubbing as men would be.
You know, it has been a long 32 years.
Wait, what?
But I usually slow down before it starts to smoke.
Before it starts to burn.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a difference between men and women.
And that brings us to present day.
So you're in Botswana. You saw a bunch of animals.
All the animals.
You learned how to make a fire, and
yeah. And then went over to Zambia and saw Victoria Falls, which is amazing. It's like a giant waterfall. Most water, not the longest or the tallest. And then got on a plane out of Johannesburg and flew back for 16 hours, which did give me time to catch up on. Silicon Valley.
Oh,
I was like, what the fuck am I going to do with all this time?
Oh, man. After all
Silicon Valley, I guess.
All those fucking animals. Let's get some culture.
I was going to say, if nothing else came out of my San Diego trip, I got caught up on all my shows.
yeah, there's lots of time for that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how long were you there for?
About 2 weeks. Long enough for me to be out where you have to take a 5-seater Cessna to, and, like, the runways really are, like, dirt, and you have to call ahead to get, like, all of the animals off of the runway.
That'd be handy.
Yeah, it's not ideal, because the plane really would fit in this room. It's tiny.
Bam!
So long enough for me to be out there, and then when I got to Johannesburg, my phone blew up with, like, Ebola outbreaks, and then it turns out there was one in Atlanta and one in Fort Worth, and I was like, I gotta go back to Botswana where it's safe.
Wow.
Okay, they were alert. I thought it was just, how did your phone catch Ebola? That's horrible.
Oh, yeah, it's evolving.
How many blood diamonds did you smuggle back?
Four.
Four.
Yeah, it turns out my orifices are not as nightmarishly elastic as they once were.
Keep working on it.
Yeah, well, we'll get that last one out.
You can pass a baby through those things. You can't smuggle a few more diamonds? What the hell?
Hey, she didn't say how big the four diamonds were.
Oh, good point.
Yeah, also, a baby isn't going out of this.
I was going to say, wait, what'd you bring back? The Sankara stones? Jesus Christ.
The fifth element is love.
Yeah. It will make you feel a little weird about diamonds, honestly. Like, not to be on a serious note for a minute, but you don't have to spend long in Africa before you feel
like
an asshole.
You completely raped that continent?
Yeah. And you feel like a pretty big dick.
What do you mean, we? I ain't do shit.
How long did your ancestors live here, Martin?
I was the one. I saw the boats. I'm like, hey, these people look cool. Invite them over.
I would have gone to that party.
Martin was on the shore going, wait, you beard comics? How bad could it be?
Yeah, on the 7-year boat ride. It was a 16-hour plane ride.
It turned out that boat ride lasts 400 years.
Wow. I hope when we go to hell in a handbasket there are potty breaks. Because I don't want to have to hold it.
I'm sure more than a few people will be peeing on us.
Yeah, fair enough. Jesus. If there's any justice.
But anyway, yes, we're glad to have you back.
Thanks.
You had to hide for a while because you had to take like 8,000 shots and what have you.
I did. I was on like anti-malaria meds, and
those are the worst.
Yeah. Yes. Did you say like you kind of trip out on them?
You
stuff?
Do. That's awesome. Like a known. Yeah. And it was funny because when I came back, I was like, I wasn't sleeping, and I was a little like wigging out and like kind of like foaming a little and like congested.
Man. Jesus.
And on the one hand, it was nice to hear that's a side effect of the malaria meds, but on the other hand, you still look like a rabid dog.
Yeah. Well, that's how you know it's working.
Wait, you were like actually drooling?
Well, not a lot, a little.
Just a little.
I had a negative response.
So just a little bit more than usual.
Look, I guess what I'm trying to say is a sheltered comic book fan white girl went to Africa and came back a little rough. Like, who's surprised? I have allergies.
I would think that hearing that those are side effects would be just the sweetest words in the world.
Yeah.
When those you having those symptoms already, mm-hmm. and somebody says, no, those are side effects. Oh! Oh my god, thank you!
I just thought they were flashbacks.
I still have this image in my head. You get off the plane, and Terry Crews is singing with Toto, and you know.
Oh yeah.
I still remember that.
Well, Toto wasn't his backup band, but they should have been.
So that song is a jam, and it was a constant joke amongst me and the people who were there, and it did not get old. 2 weeks is not long enough to get tired of Brains Africa.
Well, that's all right. It's old now, though.
Not even close.
Sorry. But that's why you did not get to see Ashley at Festivus.
Which I was super sad about. I missed you, dude.
Because she would have like ended up going home with some like big like fat nerd and thought it was her boyfriend because she was tripping so hard.
No, you're always getting me and Bo confused.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Bo.
I already did that.
You know what? He was a nice boy, though. Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. Festivus ended up being a good time for everybody involved. My favorite night was really at Mr. Tramp's, I thought, where after going mm-hmm. to Pinball's Arcade and playing games for a little while, we kind of took over the back area of this bar that had like ceiling to floor projection screens on three walls and a PA system, and we put in a bunch of movies, had like sort of contests where anybody wanted to be the third person commenting on films with us would like, you know, volunteer and come up and reach into the bag and pull out a movie, and then we have the audience call out a number and we put that chapter on.
Oh, kind of like a choose your own pancake.
Yeah, sort of like that, except only with like one chapter of a movie at a time.
Yeah.
So we would do that, and then we'd change the movie and change the commentary. That was fun. And then YouTube karaoke, at which point the night gets very hazy for me.
Of course.
I was like,
yeah, I left at midnight. I was like, I'm done.
Yeah, I was like, it wasn't until someone posted a video of the end of the night that I was like, wow, we did that? I don't remember that at all.
Yeah. No, I could see it getting into that territory. I was like, oh, things are getting fuzzy around the edges.
It was. Oh. I made the mistake of drinking the new Fireman's Squared.
Yeah, it's four to the second power. Yeah.
I'm saving that for Christmas.
It's tasty and
is it
dangerous.
Strong? Oh, really?
Yeah, because like, I didn't even have that many of them, and I was plowed.
You only had a 12-pack.
Yeah,
yeah, they're like double strength. So,
yeah. I should have guessed by the big two on it. Oh, and what does that mean?
Everybody's always trying to pop their numbers up and make them sound bigger than they are.
It's fine. It's fine.
Everybody talking shit.
And we did a at Randy's store at Rogues Galleries Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. We did a Cards Against Humanity tournament, and you know who won?
Grant. Yeah, he told me. I saw him
the
other day.
Thing. It was so nice to see him out there.
Yeah,
gotten to hang out.
The
with
inside
him.
Of Grant's brain is loathsome. He's come up with some horrible things.
He's one of the quiet, smiley, sneaky ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he comes out with that one that undercuts you there, mm-hmm. gets you at the ankles. Yeah, he's been really busy though on the internet. If you haven't heard him on here, you should definitely check out The Beerists.
Oh yeah,
with him and John Rubio, where he's a regular contributor on it, as well as of course the TV Dudes,
right? Which he started.
Yeah, I know. He ended the Lounge Geeks, and we sort of incorporated a lot of the shows. But he was like, "You can't have the TV."
No, it's mine.
That one's mine.
And he's on Rage Select all the time.
Yeah. So yeah, he's on the internet more than I am.
And he's also on the internet with his newborn baby.
Yeah,
everywhere, probably more true. Places.
Well, because yeah, he made that like Photoshop pictures of with his baby like in various action movie type things, and it got picked up. The internet found it, like Reddit found it, and went crazy. And the next thing you know, some Australian television station is calling him, going like, "Hey, we want to do a story."
I know it was like he
it's a slow news day.
He posted those like on the one day that the cops weren't killing any innocent people, and it just took off.
Topical.
Oh, we don't have days like those anymore.
And now for the part of the show we like to call the Ferguson Report. I just, it's so, your one response to all that was like, how long do I have to tell you before you listen?
I know. I'm like, don't come to me with this. I've been talking about it for years. And you all said I was crazy.
Okay, not that bad. Yeah. And the news stories keep rolling.
Oh, I know. I know. I'm like, no matter how this one shakes out, I could post 1,000
Well, it's sad that people are still, like literally, you know, one of these guys could go on air with, like, you know, and have a dinner date with Daryl Gates where they carve and eat up a baby. And people would be like, dude, they have a hard job. Yeah, they, right. they need to de-stress.
I don't know. Did you see that? I think it was Wired.
You want to talk about stress? Pitch some flag down the middle of the road in Ferguson.
I think it was Wired that was posting the pictures of, like, the white supremacists who were like, support your cops, and then, like, superimposing it with, like, the people now who are holding those signs. I was like, yes! Yeah. Nailed it.
Yeah, it's funny. Like now all these stories that, some of which are years old, seeing them on the net, are coming back out again.
Oh, yeah.
Videos of cops, like, shamelessly beating the crap out of people who were just trying, who were like, didn't have anything on them. Now they're coming up as if they just happened, and you're like, I've been seeing this shit going on for years, Martin and I, and nobody said shit.
Nobody said
shit. But now it's a meme. So we're like, what we're here, next thing is going to be like, cops beating people while pouring ice water on top of them. We're beating this guy for ALS.
It's the ALS Ice Water Cannons Challenge. We're clearing the streets.
Maybe more like waterboarding.
Done to the theme of the soundtrack to Disney's Frozen.
Piece of me just died.
Yeah.
The piece the cops were gonna punch. I had a flat tire.
Now you really are one of us.
Yeah. It feels like home.
Just let go of your civil rights.
But yeah, it was really fun the whole weekend. Not Ferguson, the weekend of Festivus. Not so fun, probably. And one of the weirdest parts was, like, the old, the Spill 13, I guess they were called. I don't know, they called themselves something else.
Yeah, I guess they were the Spill 13. But they eradicated the more dramatic elements.
Which they talked about all weekend.
Did they really?
There was constant jokes about, like, kicking Chicago John in the head and stuff, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
But the drama they had this year, I'm sure, of the 10 who came, was minor.
Well, they rented another...
Yeah, because we don't sit around and talk about all the stupid shit we've done over the years.
Well, they rented another ridiculous house.
Yeah.
Except this one was, like, bigger than the last one.
Right. Oh, it's a sweet house.
Yeah, it was just 50 minutes away from Austin.
Yeah, it was a long way away.
And I was surprised at that, too. I was like, how are you guys getting home?
Well, that was a funny thing, because I visited them in the afternoon, and I was like, oh, I live south. No, I don't.
No, you do not.
Not compared to where they live in Buda. I was like, you guys didn't want to rent a house in Austin, maybe?
Now I can say I've been to the racetrack, though. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, have you seen it?
Yeah,
it's pretty nice.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I've driven by it.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's where it is. Hell and gone.
Aw,
yeah.
And your mom would be so proud.
It would
take her back.
Fantastic house.
Are you suggesting my mother had sex with a bunch of race car drivers?
I'm just calling it like I see it.
Damn it. I'm sorry, Mom. There. Your secret is out. Ashley's been telling us she was psychic. I didn't know it till now.
It's a side effect of the malaria meds.
But that house was really cool. It was
a rock pool and a jacuzzi and barbecue grill.
Those guys were like...
And a golf cart.
I got out there...
They're like their own pond.
I didn't even get there until like midnight.
How'd you even get out there, let alone get back home?
I drove out there and I was like, all right, I'm going to front load getting fucked up and partying. So like, I mainly, like, you do the thing, you smoke a little, you know, because then you won't drink as much. You're like, okay.
Is that how that works?
Sure, that's a theory. Okay.
No, it's always worked for me.
Okay.
Really, you won't drink as much. You're like, okay.
Oh, so you're sensitive to nicotine.
Because you feel much more fucked up than you actually are. And then when it wears off, you're like, oh, I'm actually fine. But like, all those guys, they were fucked up.
Yeah. For the record, one of us does not endorse that approach.
they were like, well, you know what, we're just going to stay up all night because we got to leave in the morning anyway. So they were on that kind of trip, like, screw it, you know, let's just keep going. And it was at one point Grant was in the pool leading a party game called Mafia. I didn't know what it was.
Okay.
I did not play, but they were all playing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've heard that game. I mean, I think I've played it before.
I think it's like Werewolves of the Dark Hearts, right?
I have no idea.
I think
something
so.
Like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the game Ava Green was playing in Sin City? And, it sure sounds like
and
it.
And Brian was progressively...
The Take Your Top Off game?
Yeah, right.
No, that was not the game, though.
Well, I'm sure there was that kind of element involved.
You were just taking your top off.
When did she take her top off?
When did she put it on?
Fair,
fair. Attention to detail.
What about Brian?
You know, Brian was progressive. Like, was getting... He was wasted. He got there for
no.
too.
Oh, Brian? Said,
Brian?
But like, Brian Salisbury joking? Yeah. I have a hard time
People started jumping off the rock wall into the pool, and he's like,
bad idea.
I can do better than that. So he's like climbing up to the top of the waterfall, like the highest.
Oh my god.
I'm picturing Fred Flintstone doing
it. I'm a golden god.
Yeah, well, that's what I was calling him the whole next day. It's like, hey, what's up, golden god?
I think it was cute that Martin thought that Brian would have stopped the bad idea train. Yeah, like, that was really that was charming. Adorable. Thank you.
Yeah, no. I still believe in Brian.
We all believe in Brian. We just would like to realize he might have a shortened lifespan.
We believed in Harvey Dent and see where that got us.
Yeah, I'm honestly surprised he did not hurt himself because he kept going back up there. And I was like, even like, Brian, you sure you want to be doing that? He's like, I'm fine. I'm like,
okay. When, who can argue with that?
I was like, hey, man, I'm not your babysitter. I don't tell you.
Well, I missed Festivus because I had plans to go out to the coast that weekend. But I did stop by that house the day before on Thursday. Thursday afternoon, 2:00, when they are hungover, they were fucked up. Like, to the point where some of them couldn't even complete a sentence. And I'm just standing there, I'm like, dude, you are way fucked up. You can't even talk. No, like, wow, okay.
I can't believe they actually made it to the Festivus events. I was like,
I know.
Hearing about that going, those guys are just going to crash.
Yeah, like, do they have a car service or what? I was just like,
because they had
a complete van.
Yeah, the same guy that delivered the Whippets picked him up and drove him to the party afterwards.
But it was great to see all those guys, no question. It was really fun partying with them all. And
it was good to see.
I think overall it was a real success of the weekend. I'm sad that you two could not have been there.
I know.
I know, me too. Maybe we can just throw another party.
Well, we will
eventually.
Let's
do it next week.
Okay.
No. That about broke me as much as I can be broke.
I think I audibly heard his liver cry when you said that. It hardened a little.
You promised me this would be the last time for at least a month.
Shut up, liver.
Let's just do this thing and I'll get back to killing you with beer. All right, so moving on. I was not on the Guardians of the Galaxy review because I was trapped in fucking San Francisco, because the first time ever, all the flying we've done, all the events we've gone to, first time it's ever happened to me where my flight was canceled. Never happened before.
Yeah, I've never had that happen.
Yeah, and it was like the halfway point from San Diego where it was like, going to San Francisco, it was like, okay, next flight in an hour, cancel the flight for mechanical problems, which, you know, I'm just as well. I don't want them to we can make it. It'll be fine. And I was like, what am I going to do? It was already like 12:30 at night. And so I called Tom Croxton, who, you know, Mike, his brother, had put us up in San Diego. Tom lives in San Francisco. I was like, maybe he's still up. And he didn't answer. I was like, well, it's like I'm sleeping in the airport. And
they've been like Tom Hanks in the terminal.
Right. Well, his brother.
The likeness is chilling.
Saw my Facebook post and called him, and he picked up the phone that time. He's like, oh, shit. And it turns out he lived 5 minutes from the airport. But anyway, the point is, I missed the screening because of that.
Yeah.
I have finally seen it. It took me 2 weeks to go see it finally.
You were killing us.
Well, Courtney was like, please don't see it. I know I never say this, but please don't see this without me. And I was like, and she's so busy. This is my girlfriend, Courtney. She's so busy right now. It's insane.
She's a wonderful girl. But with that, you should have broke up with her.
No. That's a good thing she never listens to these. And yeah, totally. There was so much hype, to put it mildly, about this film.
True.
I was like, I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to be the Martin on this one.
That was my fear for you. It was like, it's been hyped up so much. I'm like, I don't know how he'll be able to come out of it without going like, man, it was all right.
And it's funny that it did take me a little bit at first to warm up to it.
Well, it does.
Because you're like, I don't even know what's going on.
Right.
But that's part of what makes you want to go back and see it again, with the context of knowing everything you know by the end. A really, truly fun and wonderful film that has much more in common with space operas like Star Wars than it does with any Marvel film.
Well, that's the thing. When I saw it, I immediately said, this is Star Wars, except better written and really funny. and just last week, I watched Star Wars again. Like, I hadn't thought about watching it, but my youngest daughter, she just mentioned like how she's never seen it. And I was like, oh my God, I failed you as a father. Come on, we got to sit and watch Star Wars.
I'm going to call social services right now, in fact.
And as we watched it, I was like, yeah, Star Wars is all right, I guess. But Guardians, they really knew how to take this and do it. Here's my thing about it. Prior to Guardians of the Galaxy coming out, being the biggest movie this summer, because it's relevant again because it just jumped back to number one after
It didn't have any stiff competition last night.
The Turtles unseated for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then it hopped back up to number one, which hardly ever happens.
Almost never.
But the thing is, okay, so J.J. Abrams, he's working on the new Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
And up until Guardians came out, the hurdle he had to clear was being better than the prequels.
Yeah.
That's all he had to do.
Yeah.
Now... Man, that's been
now he's fucked.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
He's like Colin James Gunn is like, you got any tips?
Because the average review feels like it's going to, by default at this point, no matter how good it is, say, yeah, it's still not as good as Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, unless he really does pull it out, but so far nothing in his history says to me that he's got it in him to do that.
Right.
Especially not with, like, execs from Disney and Lucasfilm just glaring at him constantly.
Well, I mean, you know, when I first started saying, when they leaked all the Stormtrooper helmet photos, I was just like, oh, so we're going to have Stormtroopers again, great.
Well, yeah, it seemed, they've even said Darth Vader makes an appearance in it. And I was like, how does Darth Vader...
I like that everyone's response was just an ugh.
Why don't you just reboot the entire fucking series? I mean, it's just like, stop dicking around and saying, hey, we're going to remake New Hope. Everybody wants to see that, right?
Well, and there's literally no way they can have the sense of humor that we all find so charming about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Exactly, yeah.
It's so good.
In some ways, there was less... In a lot of ways, there was less pressure on James Gunn to
Absolutely, the
Marvel Universe, it was the one that's really disconnected from anything else, and the one that they could most afford to fail with.
Everybody was just going like,
he was talking about
mulligan.
Apparently, he was on the set talking about like, you know, I'd kind of like to do a Thunderbolts movie, and the guys like, you know, whoever the Aviarod clone or you know symbiont that was there to make sure everything was going along the lines with Disney and Marvel was just like. Dude, if you stick the landing on this,
you can bite your own.
You're fine. Well, that's because it's Guardians of the fucking Galaxy. Nobody knows who the fuck they are.
If you can make these,
and whoa, what a landing!
Yeah. If you can make these characters who not even comic readers give a shit about,
right.
Like
except
I didn't know,
except
they were.
Randy.
Hey, I'm in the.
Yeah, but they were not on high up on your list of favorite characters. I would assume.
I've always really loved Drax. I've always really liked, you know, I have. You know, I was a big Captain, you know, the original, or not the original, but the Marvel version of Captain Marvel is where Drax got his start. I actually had the original limited series with Rocket Raccoon that Del Mantlo and Keith Giffen did. I still have my Marvel preview of, like, the second
Star-Lord
thing. I mean, so, yeah.
Once again, though, would any of these characters have made it to your top 20?
As far as like, you go and even, like, you put a blindfold on me and you say, all right, put your top 10 most obscure characters into this hat and draw one, and that's who we're going to make a movie out of. None of those would have made the roster.
right.
It's just like, No, and it's weird because, like, Marvel's got this really great, rich history when it comes to making, like, these cosmic, star-spanning epics, you know, and you have characters like Captain Marvel and Adam Warlock and, you know, so on and so on and so on, you know, the Shi'ar, which unfortunately are an X-Men thing, you've got the Kree, you've got the Skrull, you know, it's like, I mean, literally since the second issue of Fantastic Four... There have been, like, threats from space and shit like that. It's very deeply embedded in Marvel's DNA. But, yeah, no, it's, like, out of all of that shit, I'd be like, well, who's going to lock it in for the Marvel Cosmic Universe? Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. Really? Okay. But if you look at the comics over the last couple of years, it makes perfect sense. Well, because what they do is they take all of those disparate series that I described and they pluck the best, like, little elements from here and there, and they make this, like, really cool team of, you know, losers, if you will, into, you know, this really kind of entertaining and fun and human team.
You know, it was Reign of Kings and War of Kings and Annihilation. I guess Annihilation
was the big start.
Where it really sort of, okay, this is the new Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Which is really recent. you know, all yeah. things considered. So, I mean, there was a Guardians of the Galaxy way before it, but they bear no resemblance no. to this.
Yeah, the only one of all of these guys who's in the original team was a completely different Yondu.
Right, right. But, yeah, I mean, they turned around and went, like, James Gunn going, okay, we'll just do your best. And it's like, oh, these are going to now be some of Marvel's biggest brands. Like, where men and women love them equally, and people want to just, like, please, give us some merchandise. All we want is some merchandise.
Well, I think...
And Marvel, I don't even think they were ready for it.
I think it speaks well to, you know, first of all, Gunn is, you know... He's a trauma guy, and he knows how to you know work the shit out of very little.
Very funny. And Trauma's owner Lloyd Kaufman has a cameo yeah. in Guardians of the Galaxy. You
know, who is he?
He's in the prison. He's like one of the guys who's up on the rail, like yelling.
Oh, okay.
Gunn has a you know kind of reputation. If, you know, for those people who've seen Slither or some of his earlier works, you know he's really good at. You know, kind of taking straw and spinning it into gold, and, you know, or if not gold, at least silver and some very nice bronze pieces. And, you know, literally somebody gave him, you know, millions of dollars and said, hey, you know, here's this franchise, we don't know what it's gonna do, but, you know, take a shot at it, and wow, that paid off in spades. You know, but he's the guy, he really had the tools, and... You know, if you do know anything about the team, he wasn't slavish to any of their original stories at all, but he really captured, like, each one of those characters, he did a good job of capturing what they're about. And now, it just translated so well.
Now, Ashley, you also did not get a chance to talk about this. But
I didn't. I was in Africa.
Presumably, yes, we know. Presumably, you've seen it by now.
I did. It was like the first thing I did when I got back and was in a condition to be in public. I loved it. It's been a while since I've seen a movie that, you know, I'm following along, I'm into it, and then they just deliver on, like, the lines.
Uh-huh,
like,
yeah.
When they first get on the ship, and Gamora's kind of giving him a hard time, and he's just like, yeah, I hope they don't take a black light. This place looks like Jackson Pollock, baby. And I'm just like, where did that come from?
Right?
They already had so many good lines, and they don't so stop because, there. They push it. Like, he's never satisfied with the scenes and the dialogues that's there, and it's always good, but... If you wait, like, I love it, too, towards the end where Jesse Riley's character is, and he's talking to the guys about what is and isn't illegal.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, I mean, yeah, that would be
what
murder.
What if someone truly offends me and I wish to kill them?
That's murder. That's like the worst crime. So,
Yeah.
I also loved his like commentary. Yeah, with the president of Nova, where he's like, he said he's not a complete. He might be an a-hole, but he's not a complete dick. 100% dick. And the woman's just like, well, what do you think? He's like, well, ma'am, I don't think anyone's 100% dick. And I was just like, yes.
I really like John C. Reilly.
He was fantastic. Yeah.
I don't think they're gonna make him Nova. I'm just
No, I don't see that.
It'd be a very odd film if they did. I can see James Gunn trying to do that. Like, I'm going to make Nova and I'm going to make John C. Reilly and people at Marvel going, we did promise him he could do it. Shit.
But seriously, what can't that guy do? Anyways, yeah, I think that's what, like, really stuck with me was just how they just never seem satisfied. Like, everything is over the top. The music's awesome. The scenes are awesome. The dialogue just pushes it. I loved it.
And David Bautista. Who I just thought, okay, you know, a big muscly guy.
Another wrestler takes a stab at acting.
And,
okay.
Yeah, his delivery on everything was just pitch perfect.
Well, they kind of found the perfect Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Terminator type of role, where it's like, we don't need you to emote.
Yeah, please
we
do not
just need
act.
You to act confused, really, more than anything. Like,
but he wasn't dumb. That's not, it could easily have made him dumb.
No, he's not dumb, and that's the trick where it works, because
he's just literal.
He's just so literal, and he does not understand what anybody's talking about most of the time. He's not stupid. His people just don't talk that way.
Right.
So he's just always, like, kind of baffled by what's going on and pissed off.
Nothing he
actually says at some point. He's like, what is wrong with you?
Well, yeah,
it's the way we talk.
I think they did a great favor to win people over to a franchise that might not even be popular with nerds by having just a hair of exposition. Like when Gamora's like, his people are very literal. Like it was just enough so that people know kind of what's going on.
Need a huge backstory.
Exactly. So just get to the awesome.
Well, that's not from the comics. I mean, that was kind of spun out of
which is great.
It was like that sort of like mixing levels, different things about his versions of Drax along
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, there
and
a
finding
lot.
A new interpretation that kind of makes them all work
yeah.
as a translation.
Yeah, that's, you know, pretty much everybody in this is kind of a pastiche. You know, Chris Pratt's Star-Lord is basically like, well, let's take a little bit of Star-Lord and then wrap him around Chris Pratt. Which is fine, because Chris Pratt's great.
Also, I'm listening.
Yeah. It's like, to those, the music of his abs.
Tiny bit of Han Solo in there.
And
just about everybody,
I'd
really.
Say, like, I mean, there's obviously there's Star Wars DNA in here. There's obviously Firefly DNA in here mm-hmm. as well. You've got a team of, like, ne'er-do-wells mm-hmm. who are, like, forced to work together and end up being a pretty good team. And, you know, there's still that Marvel Universe feel to it going on throughout this as
oh, yeah.
well. I really was proud of the fact they managed to do a whole film all but devoid of origin stories.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's literally mentioned
exactly.
in passing all that you really need to know about these characters. And I kind of wish more superhero movies would just do that. I mean,
House of Faith.
Hello, Sony, stop telling us Spider-Man's fucking origin. People in Botswana know Spider-Man's origin.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Miss Ashley, you would die. But I do know one thing.
Well,
that is Peter Parker was bitten by a radioactive spider.
Unless you count Miles Morales, with a slightly different origin.
And I mean, even if they're less common, like, the people that I know that didn't like the Thor movies, like, that was kind of their complaint, where it's just like, I don't care. Maybe I didn't know it, but also I don't care. It's like that whole Brian Posehn thing where it's just like, just drop me in the world, capture my imagination, let's go from there.
Yeah, let's like figure out the backstory as we go. You don't need to flash back to it. You mm-hmm. just go make it a dramatic point later on with something, sure, but for God's sake, don't spend the first 30 minutes of your fucking movie setting up towards them being.
And dear God Christ, don't make an entire movie called Origins. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Actually, instead of asking them to not retell Spider-Man's origin, I would just ask them to stop making Spider-Man movies.
At this point, it seems like a good idea. You know what?
Take a breather.
Tony, I'm just saying. Like, maybe you'd make more money at this point by selling it back to Marvel.
Right?
I mean, I'm pretty sure that if, like, you could put almost any offer on the table and Marvel's gonna say, yeah, sure, we'll take him.
I mean, you know, yeah, make it to where you get some on the back end.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. Like, we just want 10% of the profits from here till the end of time.
I like the idea.
Okay, we'll make better movies than you did, so.
Yeah.
I like the idea, whoever picks it up, like, someone just sitting there, like, thanks. No, we're cutting that. Just like, it started literally everything.
I just want to see him be an Avenger. That's all I want. I'm sorry.
Fair.
I spent so much of my youth, like, watching Spider-Man almost become an Avenger over and over and over again, and always feeling so bad for him because something would get in the way. And they're like
the fact that he's a terrible team member.
Right? You're kind of a loner,
just
right?
Just saying.
That's not what we do on a team.
Oh, no, like I remember one of the better 80s crossovers where he was like, you know, came within an eyelash of joining. Like, Cap was just, because he was like, oh, well, I'll just tag along with the team, and they'll see how great I am, and they'll obviously let me. And Cap just, like, chews his ass out, and he's like, no, you don't understand. We're a fucking team, and you're not working like a team member, and that's why you're fucking everything up. Don't do that.
And then, like, over time with other things, they actually made it where he started to figure it out and how to work uh-huh. with them and got real respect for Captain America. And eventually JMS made it work with him on the
Avengers. And then he made a deal with the devil. Yeah. I rest my case.
JMS?
It's actually Bendis who had enjoyed the Avengers.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I thought it was JMS. Well, fair enough.
No, Bendis basically was responsible for everybody in the Marvel Universe joining the fucking Avengers.
That's true. That's what happened for
pretty
a while.
Much, yeah. Yeah, there was like 8 Avengers comics because there was just like...
You remember what you did with the Leog where you just like had everybody join?
My favorite is whichever the fans posted, George and the Funkadelic. Just all the people.
The Avengers was Parliament Funkadelic for a while.
That's hilarious.
And it's just like, yeah, we got the Black Avengers over here, we got the Sacred Avengers over here.
You got a bass guitar in your basement? Alright, you're in.
Yeah, we've got our neurotic kind of crazy Avengers. They're right over here.
I've never even been clear about that. There was Parliament and there was Funkadelic, and then there was
Parliament Funkadelic.
Yeah. They joined.
Okay, they joined forces.
George Clinton is
sort of like he was behind both and just said, like, we might as well.
It became like the big event comic of the whole thing. You know,
Parliament,
it's
kind of like our Blue Christmas, how we all kind of come together to drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. George Clinton was like, I'm going on a tour anyway. You guys might as well come along.
I was like, I have most of the records and I'm always unclear. I'm like, I don't understand because are they all the same band? I'm like,
look, everyone fits on the mothership.
Parliament is an R&B band. Funkadelic is a funk band. Parliament Funkadelic is the perfect combination of two two styles.
Parliament was the more commercial of the two.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Most of the Funkadelic stuff sounds
the Funkadelic stuff is weird.
It's almost like a sort of funky Frank Zappa by Black Beatles.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to a very different tone. A movie that just came out. We did not get a chance to review on Highly Suspect Reviews, but I want to talk about it a little bit anyway. Bo and I and Martin got to see it, called Calvary. This is written and directed by John Michael McDonough, who did The Guard, which was one of my favorite movies when it came out in, I guess, 2012, maybe?
Yeah.
It was like, two years ago, maybe even 1 year ago.
No, he seems to be having a sort of actor-director-writer relationship with Brendan Gleeson, who was the star of that film.
He does like having movies with Brendan Gleeson in shithole Irish towns.
Yeah, he does. What's funny, I was talking to Richard Whitaker, he was like, that's the funny thing about Calvary, it's like, you know, finally, Calvary and The Guard, somebody's finally making movies about what Irish towns are really like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like, it's not like all these, like, really twee little, like, quaint
things. It's not like
things. Once. It's not like, no. Yeah, it's like, no, it's really like a bunch of dicks.
Well, to be fair, Richard is English.
Oh, okay.
He's Scottish by origin.
And to that I'd say, go to the north of England sometime and let's have a dick contest.
I don't think you would disagree with me on that one. But this was a very different tonal film than The Guard, which was very much like flat-out black comedy. Whereas Calvary starts feeling like it's that same type
of film. It shouldn't start like that. I was like, it's going to be like The Guard.
It tricks you into thinking, like, oh, this is going to end the certainly the trailers are all like, oh, this looks like, you know, Priest on the Run goes crazy, cool fun.
Really? Yeah, it really did.
But nope. Oddly, like, despite the fact there's, you know, I mean, there's very much a big thing now with, you know, if you've got a priest in a film, you're probably a bad guy, you know, or in a television series, you're probably a child rapist or something like that. This is kind of like that idea of, what if they're, like, this priest who is a good man,
yeah,
you know, in that world where everyone just assumes he's not a good man.
Yeah.
You know, and
he's painted with a broad brush, you know, because the church in Ireland fucked over
a lot of people.
Hundreds of thousands of people.
Literally.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't seem like people thought he was a bad man. They just hated priests.
He
just happened to be wearing a black robe with a white collar.
He stands for the institution. There are two priests in the town. There's a bishop. You know, so he's not the only man of the cloth, but he's the only one that people really take seriously. And by dint of that, he kind of becomes this Judas goat for the sins of the church.
And the movie starts with a very dark moment and then becomes lighter for a while, where he's in a confessional and someone who you can't see comes in the confessional who's talking about how he was abused by a priest and then says, well, look, I can tell you're a good man, but I can't kill the priest who did this to me. He's already dead. And it seems to me that it's more meaningful to me to kill a good man who represents the church at this point, which is an evil institution, rather than just kill the guy who did it. So in a week, I'm going to kill you.
And make sure you show up.
Yeah, make sure you show up here.
So I can kill you.
I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. This is not a whodunit. He knows who it is throughout the whole movie. You don't, but Brendan Gleeson totally does, and he tells the Archbishop, well, this guy's made threats, and he's like, well, who is it? And he says, I can't tell you, it was told to me under confession. And he's like, it's okay if you tell me this. Like, he's like, no.
You gonna call the cops, maybe? Or not be there?
Yeah.
No. I'm not gonna call the cops. Yeah. I'm gonna totally show up.
I said I would.
He still has faith in humanity. At this point, he has faith in God. He does not think that this is what's going to happen.
So he's not a listener.
And he also thinks that, like, if it is going to happen, maybe if nothing else, this will be the only thing that will help this guy to get past this horrible thing that happened to this other guy in the church. I mean, he really is a good man who is put on the trials of Job in some ways here, like with everything he's going through, trying to stick to his guns, but, you know, I mean, shit, there's whiskey
in it. Well, and it brings up the main, one of the main subplots is that his daughter has come back to this little village, or at least she's gotten back in touch with him. She was living in London, and she made an attempt on her own life, and she's been estranged with him for a while because after her mother died, he literally felt the vocation. It's like, I feel the calling to become a priest. That's what I'm going to do. And it was a legitimate call it was a legitimate vocation, but because he kind of you know, took the cloth, you know, so soon after his wife's death, his daughter had no time to process this, and she was like, you basically abandoned me. You know, and he was like, I wasn't trying to do that. I wasn't trying to run away. I felt this true calling. And she's like, I know that now, but doesn't help me out that
it's
much.
It's a sympathetic but strained relationship with his daughter. It's a guy that has a checkered past, but not so checkered as that you hate the guy or, like, condemn him.
Right.
He's just, he hit hard times, didn't know what to do, went to the cloth, and is honestly trying to make the best of it, is honestly trying to be a compassionate human being. He's a good man who knows that he's not as good as he wants to be as well.
Well, you're also leaving out the fact that there's several characters in this town. While there might be, you know, a few people, there's several characters recurring characters who keep popping up, and they are complete shitheels to him, unmitigated.
The only one in this town that isn't, like, kind of a complete shithead to him, other than, you know, his daughter who's there visiting, is a little kid.
Right.
You know, pretty much everybody else, you know, the institution of the church has, you know, become so blemished at this point in Ireland, you know, at least, you know, by the camera that you see in this movie. The people, you know, there's a surgeon, an atheist surgeon, you know, out and out atheist, you know, there's...
Played by Aidan Gillen, who, of course, plays Littlefinger.
Littlefinger, yeah, the first time he shows up, I'm like, don't trust that guy!
I know, right?
Oh, fuck! There's a very wealthy man, you know, the wealthiest man in town, who made all of his money by, you know, basically the same way that a lot of the 1% in this country made their money, mm-hmm. by fucking people over, and then... You know,
played by comedian Dylan Moore, known for the show Black Books and the movie Shaun of the Dead.
And when the Irish economy collapsed, as it did a couple of years ago, just like ours did, for the same reasons, he's still got a lot of money, and now he's kind of at this moral end where he doesn't know what the fuck he is.
He doesn't know what to do except give shit to this priest.
And spend money, like, very, very obviously and vulgarly.
Yeah.
In a vulgar manner, and in fact, when the church at one point burns down, he's like, "Oh well, I'll pay for it." And Gleason's character is like, "That's fine. It's a completely meaningless gesture coming from you, though."
Yeah. You said it's not a murder mystery, and that's true in the context that yes, the main character already knows,
right?
But it's kind of a murder mystery in advance,
sure.
Sort of like, and because the audience is puzzling it out. There are all these people who clearly have axes to grind, either with the church or with him specifically, and you're constantly looking at it in that sense of, like, who is the person who hates him enough to do this?
And it could be any of you assholes.
And there's lots of great people. Chris O'Dowd, of course, who's in any movie that requires an Irishman, is in this. M. Emmett Walsh, who looks like if the Crypt Keeper went on an eating binge at this point.
God bless him, dude. I can't believe he's still alive.
He looks like one of those characters that Frank Miller will draw in Sin City.
Yeah, he's getting there.
In Sin City 2, when they have Stacy Keach and all the makeup, I was like, why do that?
Why just get MMM?
But funny, still a stamp of approval, you know, because it's like, and was it Roger Ebert who said, like, hey, if MMM Walsh is in it, it's probably a decent movie, or at least it'll have a decent scene. And, you know, sure enough, I found this enjoyable, and there's MMM Walsh, so he's still a gold seal for me in a lot of ways.
I really did like this film a lot. In fact, I kind of admired it more than I liked it, I would say.
Sure.
Because, I mean, The Guard is a film you enjoy. You're like, this is just fun.
Yeah, this is more meditative, and it's funny because, you know, speaking of Brendan Gleeson, I just recently saw In Bruges,
which I've been meaning to see
for a lot of time. It's got a lot in common with that insofar as, you know, kind of what the publicity materials would lend you to believe about it and what it actually is. Two very different things, and, you know, there's a definite philosophical exploration of you know, existence and the meaning of faith and the position of the church in Ireland at this point. And, you know, it is a very, very Irish movie.
What is that weird, like, a lot of contradictions emotionally going on with it?
Absolutely.
There's a lot of stuff emotionally to work through in this film when you come out of it. And not the least of which coming that, like, you know, I have feelings about organized religion, which are very strong in the I don't trust it, sort of sense. And I, so, like, it's hard to come out of this film feeling like that you're vindicated by it, despite the fact there's certainly a lot of discussion of that sort of thing, because it's still saying, look, it's important to remember these are just, they're still just human beings mm-hmm. in here. And yes, there's going to be bad apples there, just like there are on the police force.
It's weird because, you know, in a lot of ways I have some of the very same problems that you have with organized religion, and yet I still find faith a very, very fascinating thing, and I still have a deep respect for people that do have a faith. You know, if they're not acting like assholes. But you know, I find the maintenance of faith fascinating, and in many cases even admirable. And you know, this is whatever your feelings on religion. Gleason's faith is, you know, a freely practiced, admirable faith, and it makes him sympathetic, and it makes his journey like very, very deeply meaningful.
But I know that Martin had a very different take on this film than we did.
You guys bring up a lot of great points about it, and had I not seen it myself, I'd be like so itching to go see this. But it didn't play out emotionally for me the way it did for you, and so much of it was Brendan Gleeson's motivations and things. I mean, granted, I realize like so one of the things that'll disconnect me from a movie is when someone completely ignores the primal sense of self-preservation. And I don't mean like somebody says, I'm going to kill you. Well, I'm not going to be there. But along the way, there's so many things that happen. Like the characters who are all shitheels to him, like they become cartoons after a while. And they're constantly giving it to him to where even him sticking around, you, it's very obvious. Like not only are you not helping them, you're almost making it worse. These people, they hate the church, especially the atheists, yet they all show up at church every Sunday. It's just this weird kind of like, okay, I don't get what's going on. There's a point where he leaves and then comes back. And I'm just like, and it was just, and there's that point.
So you're basically saying you just don't like Irish people.
Well, there's just that point where like I was really like probably really into it for the first half.
Right.
But then like, just because had it been moving at a quicker pace, maybe I would have just blown past this. But it gave me enough time to just kind of sit there and stew in it and just be kind of like...
You had your you got to be kidding me moment at some point.
Yes, yes, yes. I had too many of those where I'm like, man, I was so digging this at first, and now it's losing me.
Knowing you, I see you just going, man, fuck these people.
I mean, yeah. That's the first thought that pops up. But I go like, there's a purpose for this. But the fuck these people voice... It railed in my head for a good 20 minutes to the point where I'm trying to counter and go like, well, no, maybe that's a good... Okay, I got nothing.
So that's, I guess, for me, where I found an exploration of faith, which was fascinating to me. I think that's what you got.
Well, and I also think there's a big motivator in this is what I did to recover from my wife's death. This is what I pretty much left my daughter for. You know, this is my vocation. I mean, and understanding what a vocation truly means. And... Man, Catholic vocation is a lot different from Protestant vocation. Protestant vocation, you still get to fuck people, you still get to do all kinds of fun stuff. Catholic vocation is like, no, you are taking orders.
And we are going to kill those Protestants in Ireland.
Well, speaking of the daughter, I suppose another thing is someone making a sacrifice.
Sure.
I find that noble, and I can see it. If they're at that point where I'm like, yes, it's time, and I have nothing.
Right.
But having a fragile daughter who you know is fragile.
Sure.
That's a big motivator to not to check out.
No, I
so that was another place where I was.
I mean, it would have like there was that point towards the end where I was like, "Where's the guard moment? Come on!" Where he's got this really elaborate plan we didn't see coming.
and I'll agree that there are a couple of characters here. I wouldn't say all of them, but I would say there are a couple of characters here that do get a little too broad, and you do want, it's like, you know, you gotta give me something other than, you know, I just don't like priests.
Yeah.
But, that being said, by and large, I found most of the people in this to be pretty believable.
Oh, also, Chris O'Dowd is one of those actors who I just can't stand. Yeah. I mean, it's just something like there's...
Wow, certain, you really do hate the Irish.
Yeah, well, there are certain actors...
I was wondering if we were going to get back to racism. Nice!
Who there are, whatever it is, no matter how much I try to meet them halfway, I just feel like they give me nothing. Mm-hmm. Sam Neill, Keira Knightley... There's a few others.
Really? I thought you were still talking about the actor, but you're talking about the Irish.
No.
They really are.
The same reason he hates Disney films so much.
You hate Liam Neeson and Richard Harris, too, don't you?
No, I love those guys. They're awesome.
You hate all Disney films, too, for the same reason, right?
What? What?
Mickey Mouse? Oh,
now, that's you, dude.
Sorry. I thought it was an Irish thing. I didn't know. I always assume. Is that not the case?
It's an Irish thing.
Fair enough. All right. Well, you know what? Sorry, that was terrible. I don't know why that got in my head all of a sudden either.
Because Bo's sitting right next to you.
That's true.
Let's hear a wee song to get our minds off of it.
Let's hit the song of the week. Hey, guess what? It's Ashley's turn, like 7 weeks over.
Oh, my God. What have I been doing?
Not listening to music.
No. You know, it's not at the top of my list. But I'm afraid that it is a little bit of a downer this.
Awesome.
Coming out of the conversation that you guys were just having, I wanted to have another super
dead priest, dead
song.
Priest, dead priest, hate the Irish. What do you got to listen to?
Well, it's coming out of Guardians of the Galaxy, I went ahead and downloaded the soundtrack. I really love it. Like,
that
it's
soundtrack is
jams.
Just lighting up the world.
Yeah, what I suggested off the last time we were, I was like, dude. That song is great.
Yeah.
Listen to more raspberries.
Man, those of you that don't live in Austin, so I hear per capita we're worse than LA, our traffic. And I have to sit in traffic a lot, and so I have just been jamming.
That's because everybody in LA moved here.
Which, fair. So I've been jamming the fuck out on the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack.
Uh-huh.
And then I started thinking a little bit about how good soundtracks have really been lately. And that got me on a little bit of drive kick. The movie Drive.
It's funny you say lately, because we were talking about on Double Toast, we were talking about how Guardians is the first movie in a while, I guess since Drive, that the soundtrack played such a big part. Like, they used to be a big deal with the movies, like, they sold them that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that Tarantino vibe kind of took a dip in the early
Yeah, but nobody listens to Double Toasted, so it's okay.
Oh, no, what if I'm getting older, too, and the ears are starting to, like, blend together? But anyway, so yes, that sort of, like, got me thinking about this other soundtracks I love, which Drive came up. I love the film, I love the soundtrack, and so I've been listening to that a lot. By a producer. I mean, he does his own music as well, but heavily film-influenced Kavinsky. So I thought that we could listen to Night Call, which is the title track, I guess you could call, coming from Drive. So it might not be uplifting, but it will weird you the fuck out. So.
Awesome!
And if you're interested, go on the page itself. We have a link where you can buy the MP3 for this, or you can buy the whole album, and when you do that, we get a kickback from Amazon, so, you know, do it. Anyway, here is a Night Call by Kavinsky from the Drive soundtrack.
Do it up.
Yeah.
I suddenly feel like being really stoic and beating the dog shit out of somebody in an elevator.
Yeah.
But
what do you think of the song?
There was a song?
So if any of you guys want to get out now.
Yeah, we're on the fifth floor, motherfuckers. Just saying.
It was funny that
you get a cool jacket out of it.
So we're on the elevator coming back up here, and there's like, you know, this is later at night, we're recording in this office building. This guy comes on the elevator with us, and we're all like, oh, you're in trouble, dude.
Yeah, looks like we've got us a ringer.
It was like that scene in The Winter Soldier. He just started kind of readying himself. Except he was like a 6-year-old balding dude, so it didn't really have the same effect. I was still ready to rumble.
Well, the super soldier serum doesn't last forever.
Right, and it wears off real fast. Like, yeah, in a minute or two.
And they do not put that on the bottle.
Careful there, Deathstroke.
Are you keeping up with Captain America comics?
No.
Okay, because
they went to shit after.
I know that like he's like really old now, and that's
he went
why
to this whole. Is that why? Like he appeared in the last issue of She-Hulk, and he's like, oh, he's got a cane, and I'm like,
yeah. Oh yeah. He went to this whole other dimension for a long time. Well, came back with a kid and a new girlfriend.
There was some villain.
He's like Connor from Angel.
Well, some new villain like sucked the life out of him, kind of vampire.
Yeah,
thing.
So now he's like works at S.H.I.E.L.D. behind a desk. Basically, and Sam.
So it's like
Sam
going
Wilson.
To work.
And he bores.
I just talk to people at work exactly. Or read this comic.
Exactly.
That guy bores the shit out of people with his old stories.
You think they're kind of cool at first, but they just go nowhere.
You think you kids, I remember when Nick was white.
They actually did a thing in the, 616 universe,
uh-huh.
Where he showed up looking like Samuel Jackson. And I was like, wait, I had to turn the comic over and go, am I reading Ultimate Universe? And then pulled off the mask. He's like, no. It was when he was Nick Fury was in hiding. And he was wearing like this latex mask that made him look like Samuel Jackson.
But now,
that's how to hide from the authorities. Turn yourself black.
The Samuel Jackson Nick Fury is the current Nick Fury in the 616.
Oh, did they change it now?
They did.
Yeah, it's like Nick Fury has to confess, like, oh, yeah, I kind of made it with a black chick back in the 60s, and he's my son.
Who didn't?
Wait. So, Nick Fury, the Nick Fury proper, is now retired or something.
Whoa.
Yeah,
let's just call him old Nick
phrasing,
Fury.
Phrasing.
What's up? He was Nick Fury longer, okay? So he
that's
was
fine.
Nick Fury.
He's
that's
no
longer,
longer
Nick
the
Fury
longer.
Too.
I think what's important, though, is that he isn't still the longer Nick Fury.
I was wondering who was going to knock that one.
I
think what the appellation you're looking for is superior Nick Fury. Oh, wait. Oh, God.
Wow. Let's all take a second and think about how racist that was.
Anyway, speaking of Brubaker.
Let's move on to some of the comic books that we've been reading lately, and one of the big ones, of course, everybody's been looking forward to is the latest book by Brubaker and
Sean Phillips,
who of course did Criminal and Incognito.
Fatale.
2 weeks ago, because I knew Fatale was ending, and everybody was talking about the Fade Out, which is, you know, Fatale is Brubaker's old noir title, and Fade Out is his new one now that they've come to a conclusion with Fatale. But Twitter was kind of, there were a lot of people going, oh, Fade Out, this is going to be great. And I tweeted like, well, I guess I'm going to have to go pick up this copy of Ed Brubaker's Fade Out because everybody on my Twitter feed will stop talking about it. And then Ed Brubaker actually went back to me, it's not out to the 20th. It's like, okay.
That's funny. I've commented
at least you're listening.
No, he's commented back to me on things I say randomly about his books.
No, he's pretty good on the Twitter feedback.
I'll have to say something. Ed Brubaker, I will have your child.
Well, I did. I bought the... So Fade Out is... obviously, his new noir title, it takes place in Hollywood in the late 40s, post-war. The Red Scare's just getting kind of up on its feet. And the world of the comic book is populated by people that are in the film industry. The main character is a writer who is also something of a front for a friend of his who is a blacklisted writer. So they collaborate, and they kind of nod to the fact that maybe the guy who's blacklisted is a little bit more of the better story writer. You know, and it's very populated. It's still the studio system, so, you know, it's, you know, got all the starlets and the security people and all the people that are, you know, kind of tightly ensconced in these little, you know, colonies in Hollywood at the time. One of the cooler things about this first issue is they released it in two formats. They released it in the regular comic book format, but they also did this really cool tabloid-sized version, which looks like an actual pulp magazine, and it's gorge.
Will it fit in my long box?
No, it won't. Unless you get a tabloid long box, which if you've been collecting comics long enough to be considered legitimate, you have.
Put it in with my famous monsters.
There you go.
Yeah, it is really cool. I wouldn't even have known that existed had you not posted something about it.
I did. In fact, like I was going through my Twitter feed and found that old you know shout out from Brubaker. So I was like, I just got it and it's gorgeous. Thank you.
Mine is in the mail.
There you go.
Yeah, it's. I found it to be very James Ellroy. Like enjoyed LA Confidential.
Brubaker?
More so than what he usually does.
Well, it's, you know, Ellroy certainly that's like, you know, his complete wheelhouse. Like old LA. You know, old school LA stuff from the mid-century, and you know, this is certainly a little more film industry than I think Ellroy's ever gotten. But yeah, it did definitely remind me of his like LA quadrilogy with LA Confidential and Black Dahlia and so forth.
Well, and I think more than Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' usual stuff, it's a straight story.
Yes.
Like, whereas usually they're weaving in, like, the superheroes or the kind of Lovecraftian universe and fatale, whereas this is very much, to Martin's point,
more like a noir film.
Yeah, more like Criminal.
Which I adore.
Although this is certainly, you know, it's about Hollywood and it's about a, you know, it's set with a noir film that's being made that's like that they can't finish, so it sounds like it's kind of meta in a way.
Yeah, I'm like really looking forward. So reading just the first issue, I want to see where it goes, because obviously I still have faith that it's going to be something super special about this, and I can't tease it out yet. I'm definitely hooked, but I can't tell if is it going to go meta that direction, is it going to go just off the fucking ship, like Fatale did. Like, what is it gonna do?
So far, it really reads like, you know, one of the classic, you know, almost a Hitchcockian bit where you know the main character may or may not be a murderer, you know, and the inciting incident is a murder, or at least a suspicious death, and you know it's kind of being played out in a couple of different ways. The studio security is covering it up. They're saying that, oh, this is, you know, it, yeah, she hung herself, even though she's got huge handprints around her neck.
Yeah.
And you know, so but that idea of, you know, kind of maybe you know, something along the lines of Hitchcock or DOA, where it's a guy trying to figure out, like, oh shit, am I a killer? Am I not? Did somebody else do it? If so, who? It's
who killed this girl, and was it possibly me?
And that's a very, like, you know, straight up noir take. Mm-hmm.
I think that happened to me Saturday night at festivals.
Sure. Who hasn't woken up like that a couple of times? Am I right?
High five.
I mean, obviously I'm not going to spoil or how the first issue ends, but I have to say that, I mean, I was already hooked because I'm a huge fan of what these two guys do, but the last couple pages of this are brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like, they're clever, they're fun. I don't know, and I was surprised by it, and so
there's a lot of fun tongue-in-cheek stuff. And man, if you're a classic movie fan like I am, dude, this stuff is all kinds of like little bits here and there where you're just like, ah, I see what you did there, and it was great.
Well, speaking of classic movie fan stuff, another book has come out called The Mercenary Sea, which is certainly trading on those tropes of old school movies, but not Well, okay, as far as film noir, when it first came out, was considered to be very genre. It was not, like, something I think people were looking at as, like, this is going to stand the test of time, necessarily. It was pulpy. And so were the things that The Mercenary Sea is based on, which is a sort of rip-roaring adventure at sea, bunch of mercenaries, like...
That collection, that ragtag team of guys from all different countries who were... Sort of Guardians of the Galaxy-ish.
There's a B-movie detective trope, and there's certainly a B-movie swashbuckler trope.
And,
I thought it was a little Firefly-esque, too. Well, especially, the Kaylee-esque character of Sam. Right.
Firefly is a... Firefly, like, you know, the original Star Trek, the original Star Wars, and Firefly are all very, very heavily mined with the swashbuckler trope.
And this is from writer Kels Simons, who I'm not familiar with.
No, me either. I'd never heard of these guys
before. Or the artist, Matthew Reynolds, who to me is the real grab, because the book is it's so attached to its source material that sometimes it even falls into playing on things that are cliched with the source material. I don't know how intentional that is, with a sort of a wink and a nod, or it's just well, this is what I'm trying to write, this kind of story. But the artwork is stunning.
Well, it's like a familiar story. It's almost that feeling like, I'm, you sure this isn't based on a movie I saw when I was a kid that was in black and white? It's like a black and white story, but it's brought beautifully out by the guys, Matthew Reynolds, by his artwork. I mean, that was what made me pick it up in the first place. I'm flipping through comics, I see something new, and I was like, wow, I just love what he's doing. I just want to study the art of it. And then I read the first issue, I was like, I'm really digging this.
It's a lot of fun.
It is fun. And that's ultimately what they're going after, is a fun book. It's almost, you know, you can't help but think Indiana Jones as well to some extent. It looks like it's going to be going more that direction as it goes along as well, because there's this whole thing in it where, even though he's piloting a stolen Chinese submarine with his team of ragtag
misfits. As you do.
Misfits.
I mean, who hasn't?
right? That's kept together with chewing gum and chicken wire pretty much at this point, with his team of misfits, and they're always on the wrong side of somebody or being played by somebody while they're just trying to make a living doing smuggling stuff or what have you. And the guy, he's got that Mal from Firefly thing where he's like, yeah, I'm a criminal, but I'm a criminal with a heart of gold. We're not going to actually do anything wrong.
I'm just looking to screw people out of their money.
I wouldn't go so far as being a war profiteer, except for where he's profiting from bad guys.
And Japan hasn't even entered the World War II yet.
Yeah, this is right before World War II. Mm-hmm.
So what year is it taking place?
I don't remember, but they have...
38, I think.
Something like that.
I think it's 1938.
Japan's really, really, really ensconced in World War II at this point. They're just not fighting us.
Well, I mean, what's going on...
Well, and that's referenced.
What's going on here at this point is that they're getting involved with, Japan and China, where China are the good guys, basically.
Right.
And they're there sort of, doing things to help out China.
China's the good guys. Yeah, I know, right? Remember that? Oh, wait.
Well, and they're already talking about Japan aligning itself with the Third Reich and all of that.
Yeah.
In issue one.
But there's this thing running thread going through it where he's the one guy who believes this old myth that there's this island filled with jewels and gold and mythical creatures. And at first it's played off okay, whatever.
Okay, Jack, okay.
But now it seems that's actually where they're going to go at some point, with more of a sort of very 30s pulp hero type of style.
Like maybe in the
it's
second...
It's the island of the gold monkey.
It just finishes the first story arc, and maybe the second one could move into Indiana Jones territory. Maybe the third one, they could discover King Kong.
It would
Yog-Sothoth.
It would all feel normal.
That's really the thing, too, is as I was reading through these, maybe it really relies heavily on the art, like you guys were saying, but there were times when it felt very, Venture Brothers-esque.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It was super fun, super funny, the art looked like that,
nice.
And there were other times where I was like, this could be a sellout of Blade Runner. Or something like that.
Yeah.
When and in particular, I'm thinking of he is the main character is involved with a lady of questionable decisions, and she's walking off into a city, an nondescript Asian looking city, and I'm just beautiful. Looks like something right out of Blade Runner. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's funny because I going to Tribe, I've only ever seen the first three issues. And I thought that was it. I was like, well, man, I'll be glad when those others come out. It wasn't until Ashley alerted me, like, oh,
I was like, there's six.
So I just, like, I had to run. I went to Austin Books and found the last two, and then Dragon's Lair to find number four, but finally tracked them all down and read them.
One of the most remarkable things I'd say about this for the art is that I've never really seen anybody do what this guy's doing with silhouettes.
Exactly. There's so often it's cheating, but he finds a way to make it not look like cheating.
It's part of the style of the thing, mm-hmm. I mean, especially of the action sequences, and somehow it makes them more fluid.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems more like it seems more like you're watching a movie.
It does.
And very cinematic. It just really, yeah, it's something like that whole writer or film thing of like, well, sometimes in horror, the less you see, the more effective it is. And somehow in this, like, putting it into a silhouette makes the action scene seem that much more dynamic.
And you know what else is dynamic? This guy's going to be signing books in Austin Books next month.
Oh, no good.
Yeah.
Guess who will be there?
I know.
I've got two thumbs.
So you're saying you?
That's me, guys. Oh,
okay. Chris Robertson. Oh, wait.
I was talking about Martin, but I'm also going to be there.
Chris Robertson will still be in Portland going like, I'm so glad I'm not in the Austin Sun. You know, when I was reading some of these books today, I was like looking through where these guys are from, and like over half of them live in Portland fucking Oregon.
Well, that was one of the reasons Robertson went there.
Yeah.
I mean, to get away from the heat.
It's become the place that comic book guys go now.
Yeah.
Like, it's Portland. I don't know why that is, but...
Because they're pasty.
Well, they
like coffee.
Yeah, they like beer. Coffee.
There's a lot of support for the artistic community there, you know, and
Oni Comics is based there. Yeah. I think Dark Horse also.
There are a couple of indie places, and, you know, like, Fantagraphics is right up the street, you know, pretty much, in Washington. Yeah, it's just...
Weird, so you think more than, like, Detroit...
Yes. Hey, if you want to start a comic book company and you don't got a lot of money for real estate space, Detroit is where you go.
Well, the city's gotten really expensive to live in, so unfortunately that is not conducive
and
to comic book artists.
Portland is still not really... They're like Austin 15 years ago, kind of, where it's like, okay, it's very cosmopolitan, it's very modern in a lot of ways, but it hasn't gone to that point where everyone from California is moving there.
Oh, that's true.
Kind of made Austin go completely insane.
It's like, just obnoxious enough to keep the assholes.
Is there interest in poetry? That's what we're missing, guys.
It's when you watch the show Portlandia, though, and I'm still like, this could be called Austinlandia.
I hear that all the time.
Or, nothing on here that couldn't happen here except
for Missoula, Montana.
Cold stuff.
Asheville, North Carolina.
But, yeah, we have sunshine.
Wait, you say Missoula, Montana?
Yeah, there's these cities.
I didn't know that was a
place. Missoula, Montana, Asheville, North Carolina, Portland, Oregon, Austin, Texas.
I knew about
Madison,
Wisconsin.
Madison,
Little cool, like... places where
little college towns,
safe places for comic book nerds to move.
Indeed. Well, good to know. Yeah, one of my best friends in the world just moved to Portland. Like, all of a sudden was like,
traitor.
One of the people from Virginia I moved here with, like, was like, I gotta go.
Who's that?
Cassandra?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, and she's like, dead to us.
She is dead to us.
Fuck her.
Traitor.
She didn't love to listen to this podcast.
Have fun in the rain, Gloomy.
One of the other books, I did not get to read this next book, but you guys are all raving about it, so now I got to go out of my way to read
it. Oh, my God.
Which is The Bunker by Joe Infernari. What a name. I love it. I'm going to change my name to Infernari. Sounds like a demon in Hellblazer.
I'm not calling you that.
It sounds like a class of demons.
Right? And then Joshua Hale Fialkov, which I'm sure I'm saying wrong.
We always do our research ahead of time, guys. You're welcome.
Joshua did iVampire,
right.
Which was really good, I thought.
Really? The new 52 relaunch?
Yes. I believe so, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Ultimates.
I always thought that like didn't went over like lead balloon.
I liked it.
Oh, it did. Doesn't mean it wasn't good. Yeah. Okay. It just didn't sell.
And then Joe Infernari did Marathon, which I've not read. But you guys, I have not read The Bunker, so it's all on you guys. You talk about it.
Yeah, so I actually went by Austin Books and Comics to pick up the Mercenary Sea upon Martin's suggestion. And I saw The Bunker and picked it up kind of on a whim. And I have to say, like, for me this year, and then I guess into last year, there has been like Saga, Sex Criminals, and now The Bunker. Like, I've really liked it.
You'd put it up on that level.
I don't know. Well, that's the thing, too, though, is that I don't know if in one volume it's Sex Criminals good, and I don't know until there's more if it could be Saga good, but as far as something being original and rewarding that I've read since those two, I think it's pretty high up there.
Dude, I've seen lots. You're not going to trick me into another thing with a bunker.
Which they actually talk about. So the bunker is about, I believe there's five friends, and they are recent college grads. They go out into just a place that feels right to bury a time capsule, and they go to try to dig a hole, but they hit something metal, and that metal thing is a bunker, and they think that's weird.
Are they on an island?
Do they seem like they lack direction, and three seasons later you want to know what the fuck is going on?
I'm sure the rest of America is doing its best to make sure that's a fact. But
so the best part is as they realize that they've hit this metal bunker of some kind, they do make some Lost references. So there's some fourth wall breaking.
Yeah, everybody there goes like, is this going to be like Lost?
Yeah, like I've seen that episode,
and
man.
And everybody else is like, shut up.
you actually say that.
No, that's exactly how it goes down. And then
let's look around. Who is named after a philosopher.
Hey, Wittgenstein, you can just fuck right off. You go home right now.
Yeah, it would only be good if they actually do call in David Lynch to sew up all the loose ends on this one. Because I don't need another Lost incident.
David Lynch.
That's who you want to sew up your loose ends.
That's how I felt about Twin Peaks. It's like he started something, they went crazy with it, and then he came back to be like, okay, now where did you leave this guy? Really? To sew it all back together. And that's what Lost was missing, was someone to do that. Anyways, back to the bunker. So they go inside the bunker, and there's a letter addressed to each of them from the future, and it turns out they all have a huge role to play, as in they are culpable for the apocalypse.
God damn it.
But except there's one of them who
that
doesn't
is true,
have a bunker.
And that's kind of fucked up.
This is on you guys.
I gotta go. I was just out here to bury a fucking time gap.
He's pretty much going like, hey, what's your letter say? I didn't get one. Which was yours say? And they were like, nothing.
Yeah, because they don't want to share their letter. And he has the really human response, which is like, if this is all from the future, why don't I have a letter? Why am I not in it? Is kind of his response, which is brilliant.
Yeah, instead of like I don't make it to the future.
Yeah, yeah. And so the art is really, I think, something special and unique. It has a very sketchy quality.
It is very sketchy. It was something that at first I was a little like, I'm not sure about this. But the more I read it, the more I'm not. I've gone past just warming up and accepting the art. I'm actually like really like looking at it thoroughly and admiring what it's doing.
Yeah, it definitely. They do a fabulous job using it, because we are talking about, obviously, there's time travel in this. Don't want to spoil it too much,
right.
But they do a great job using the art as a way to cut between there's like the future,
uh-huh.
And then like the past and the past. And they do a great job of using what seems like at first a kind of, I don't know, almost like confusing, kind of like sketchy, unclear, unfinished art style to really delineate where in time you are. Suffice it to say, the future is bleak.
Yes, there is there's a mass extinction. Matter of fact, they refer to it as AME.
Yeah.
15 years AME, after the mass extinction.
And people are basically asked to do things like, this portion of it you need to do. You need to make this decision where you betray some of your oldest friends, and here's why. And it really just kind of goes from there, and I don't know, I think
I cannot wait to pull this prank on you guys. It's going to be hilarious.
Just so you know, when I get my letter, you guys are all going to
hey,
down.
A minute, why didn't I get a letter?
There won't
I
be any
know.
Moral like problems. I'd be like, wait, I got to kill them so I stay alive in the future reserve?
You must tell Allison Murphy you've been having gay sex with Jason. Have fun.
Allison Murphy would probably be like, that's so hot.
It's very character driven. There's a mystery here that involves, you know, things happening in the future. And it pulls you along in the same way, where the story just gives you just enough to keep you going and going like, oh, what's coming next? And right when you think you got it figured out, you'll turn two more pages and it's just like, oh, shit.
Yeah, and you don't know what the right thing to do is.
Right.
It's in this day and age, I feel like that's something really special, because I've seen some shit. I've been to Africa. I've read comics. To surprise me with a moral dilemma is a trick.
In this day and age, we can go on Twitter and everybody will tell us what the right choice is.
Yeah, you've been to Africa.
Yeah, I've seen shit.
Yeah, you've seen some shit. I've been to San Diego Comic Con like 5 times.
You've seen shit.
I've been in the shit, okay?
It's going to be like in Rushmore or whatever. I was like, oh, you went to Comic Con? Were you in the shit?
Some black guy told me I was going to die before sundown. I've been there.
Really? The same black guy came up to me and said, you can take the red or the blue pill.
So, I don't know
which
why...
Which one was NyQuil, by the way?
Yeah, so. I know. I slept like a baby, though. So.
The other one was DayQuil. I should have chosen NyQuil.
So, I don't want to talk this up too much, so I'm curious what you think, Martin, as far as, like, some of the better comics you've read in the past year, like, where would you kind of place this?
You know what? There's something about this that, just on instinct, it's reminding me about the level of how I felt about Punk Rock Jesus. Although, I think I like it more, but it's something about it that reminds me of that. Like, when you mentioned Sex Criminals and Saga. Like, Saga, it just looks like years has gone into the world building, and it's so much there to where we have yet to go. And this is more like Sex Criminals, where we got a solid story. It's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just see where it is. Like, they got it figured out.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But, it's one of those books where, like, I was first introduced to it because Comixology ran the first issue digitally for free. Mm-hmm. So it's like the free comics I looked at, it was clearly the best. And then every so often I get a box of free comics from Oni, and that was one in there. And I was like, I'll get to it eventually. You bring it up, maybe sit down and read it. And like, wow, I'm so looking forward to. I'm at that point now where I was with Lost, where the first year it was on, I didn't watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe it's like some kind of offshoot of Survivor or whatever.
Right, I think we all did.
It's like fair.
Yeah, it wasn't until everyone was talking about the first season after it was over that we all went, wait, what? I actually watched the whole first season with the Cargills at their house on DVD. We're uh-huh. like, all right, let's watch this. Then we all got totally cracked out together. Like, oh my God, one more episode. It's 5 in the morning, the day after we said we would stop watching episodes.
There was a website I was writing reviews for, and they wanted to know who wanted to review Lost. And I was like, well, I've never seen it. And they were like, oh, well, then it's going to be you.
Then it's you.
Yeah, and watching that box set once it was done, you know, 2 days later, I'm having to wait for the individual episodes each week. And there was like, why don't you just wait till it's done? It's like, no. And now with The Bunker, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to have to start buying this every month when it comes out.
I hate to tell you, the next one of The Bunker, Michelle Rodriguez would be.
One thing I will also say about this is that it hits the ground running, which is nice. Like, it hooks you on, like, the second page. Like, telling you basically the plot line is no spoiler. Like, all of that becomes apparent to you by page 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. It's kind of phenomenal what they pack into those pages.
Because there was such a, like, if you got a letter, you know, you as much as you say, like, oh, I wish I could go back and visit myself from the past and tell them things. But right now, if you've got a letter from yourself from the future, how much would you pay attention to it? Especially if it said, like, you're going to destroy the world. You're like, what?
Well, the problem is that, like, I know you and I both are very, like, we would go, well, clearly this isn't real. I mean, you're going to have to, Jesus himself is going to have to first prove he exists and then appear and then go, no, it's totally real, dude. Let me take you to the future for a minute before we would believe it.
No, they cover
that. And they kind of do that,
So it's like one of those, there's no denying that this is
It's like a letter written to you with things only you know and only other person you know who could have known this.
Anyone who reads your Facebook
could not have even written it. Yeah.
Or live journal. Whoa, it's almost like they've read my live journal. Yeah, this sounds really cool. I definitely want to check this out. The Bunker.
Yeah, from Oni Press.
One last book we're going to talk about, and then we're going to wrap this up, is Clone.
Oh, we are going to talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about Clone. And one of the things is reading... What is happening over here?
Send in the clones.
Oh,
Jesus. Oh, I just thought he's been hitting that Jim Beam.
Oh, no, it's a little bit
of column A, a little bit of column B.
Hey.
Clone is, let's face it, it's Orphan Black with the dude.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Great. Like, it's everything that I didn't want.
Well, when you guys first start talking about Orphan Black, I kind of blew you off because, like, I'm already reading a comic like this. What, they copy this? Apparently, it seems like these things were created at the same time.
They came out right around the same time, and this is from Robert Kirkman's Skybound imprint at Image Comics, and also known as the stuff at Image Comics you read. And it's has a lot of the hallmarks of that sort of stuff. The artwork reminds me a lot of a Jeff Darrow.
Jeff Darrow, because it's so laden with details.
Yeah.
Like, everything is very detailed. It's funny, because when I first read the book, I wasn't that crazy about the art. Like, I was like, I like some things what this guy does, but his style, he's weird with the eyes. And there's a lot of artists who tends to draw eyes too big, and he was getting them maybe too far apart, and lips maybe a little too big. But I like what I was reading, so I stuck with it. And now I'm noticing, like, I've watched him over the course of these 19 issues. His art has really improved. I'm like, man, he's really nailing things and doing stuff that's just amazing.
Yeah, and I have not got that far. I'm like 6 issues in or okay. so with this right now. But, yeah, the basic idea is this guy, much like Orphan Black, has a normal life. His wife is pregnant. He's, you know, excited to become a father, what have you. And then it turns out that there's this, like, whole conspiracy of, like, clones. Like, he's one of, like, probably thousands of clones who are all out there and are on the run from a corporation that is taking them out.
Yeah.
Like, and that one of the bigger guys at the, you know, the hitman at that corporation is one of the clones as well. And it's, and much like Orphan Black, you've got the thing where, like, oh, well, why is he special then? Why should we care about him than these other clones? Because he's the only one that has the ability to reproduce. And the company is really interested in that because they're like, that shouldn't have happened. Why is that happening? You know, why is his wife pregnant? She shouldn't be pregnant.
I'm just thinking now, like, you're only at issue 6.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I don't think you've reached the point where you see where it and Orphan Black go in different directions.
Well, I'm sure that it does. Yeah. I mean, it already is like has a different tact in the sense that Orphan Black is much more character based and this is a little more event oriented.
You know? In the beginning, I mean, yes.
Yeah. It's very violent. It's like lots of action.
Yeah. It almost feels, it's just sort of being an Avatar press book.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of does feel like an Avatar press book. It's not to that level of glorification right. of like just like getting in the blood puddle and making angels in it type of way that Avatar press is. Yeah. But, yeah, it's that kind of violent. But,
oh, blood angels.
It's been a long time, huh?
At least since junior high.
but this is by David Schulner and Juan Jose R.Y.P. Rip?
I guess.
Reap a cheap. And I am enjoying it so far, but yeah, I was just so thrown off by the comparison to Orphan Black
that
I was like, I don't know what, I had to go online and look, when did this start? And compare dates as like, they're so close as to say, it's gotta be just one of those weird synchronicity things, you know?
Well, you know, the certainly that kind of stuff occurs all the time.
Oh yeah.
You know, where you just get like, oh, now suddenly everybody's into space opera. Oh, now suddenly everybody is into computer stuff.
Well, this is very specific with the details.
Oh yeah.
Where I was like, wow, that's really strange that they would be this close to each other and start at the same time. But, like you said, things like that do happen sometimes. Although, funny enough, I was watching the Blu-ray of Leviathan the other day, which was the film that came out the same year as The Abyss and Deep Star 6.
Yeah, when everybody was like, hey, let's rip off Aliens but make them underwater.
Two other underwater films.
Yeah.
And they openly admit, it's like, oh yeah, it was like one of those, like, we like weren't even sure if we were going to do Deep Star 6 or Leviathan. We were like, well, we got to do one of these big underwater movies because The Abyss is coming out and that's going to beat all of them. And everybody already knows it from the get-go. It's James Cameron. But we got to be the one to take that like little scraps vulture money out.
I got 3 words for you: White House Siege.
Right.
But I do think the clone so far, what I've read, was very much worth reading. I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes from here. It's funny though, with all these new books that I've been reading, you guys have been recommending, I'm still stuck on like the best 2 books I've been reading that are new are the ones from the last episode that Danny told us about, which is Alex plus Ada and Rat Queens. And Rat Queens has become like, I want a t-shirt right now. Like that, you were saying new books that are with you up there with Saga.
Yeah.
And Rat Queens is up there with me with Saga nice. And Sex Criminals. Like,
actually,
oh my
you
God.
Didn't bring up Alex and Ada before?
I haven't read that one.
Oh,
so I need
good.
To hit that up.
Oh my God, yeah.
Nice.
So great. I love the whatever the Luna Brothers did.
Well, but what I'm finding, like, when you read Image Comics, you like you get done with this awesome comic, and in the back are ads for all these comics that look like they're just as awesome as the one you just got done reading. And I go to the store and I just like look and you know where all their books are. And I'm just like, I can't afford all these.
But
I'll run them all.
Being a comic reader in today, it's the same problem with being a television viewer. There's too much stuff.
Yeah.
That's
it's
to
physically
choose from.
Impossible to
you
watch all the stuff that's good.
Watch all the stuff or read all the stuff that's good anymore. There's just too many people doing it. Our culture is so immersed in it, and there's so many talented people out there. I'm always baffled by anyone who goes, oh, yeah, this is the shittiest time for comics or TV.
Oh, I know.
And I'm like, well, no, like one of the guys who is a perfectly nice person in person, Lars Nielsen from the Draft House.
Yeah.
Did you see the thing he posted? We're saying, like, can anybody show me any art that's any good at all anymore in comics?
No,
and I was like, and people, there was like 300 comments of examples.
And his standard was like, well, nobody draws like Kirby anymore. No, they don't. You're absolutely fucking right.
Yeah, but that...
And?
But... Like, even, like, that was, like, that was he was the best of a bunch of hacks
at
the time.
Jaime Hernandez.
But you try and tell me that some of the artists today aren't technically better than Jack Kirby? You're wrong.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
Sure, they learned from what he did and improved on
it. His perspective is like, oh, anybody who uses anything with a computer is automatically bad.
Yeah.
And I was like...
Well, Lars kind of lost me when he made his, like, I just don't see what anybody sees in the Police. I was like, well, maybe the fact that they have the greatest drummer of the 80s,
maybe
among
that.
Other things, and we're arguably one of the top five pop bands.
I took everything in my that I had not to get involved.
Where is he saying all this stuff?
On Facebook.
On Facebook.
Yeah, I was just like, dude, how can you be so smart about some things? Like, one of those guys who's like brilliantly smart about some things.
He's
such a blithering idiot about others.
He's an incredible curator of films. He curates the Films for Hours, and Film Side does an amazing job.
Oh, yeah.
Brings in, like, I saw X-Man with the X-Ray Eyes. They're doing a Roger Corman perspective lately. Brought in this beautiful fucking 35mm print. Love it. Love hearing him talk about film, you know. But, yeah, and then it'll just be like, oh, you went from this guy who's really brilliant in his own field to, oh, now I'm going to be a snarky hipster.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be a snarky 20-something hipster. And that's fine.
He's 20-something?
Yeah.
And he's still saying Jack Kirby's the greatest thing that ever happened?
He's one of those
I'm sorry. I'm not denying Jack Kirby's greatness, but I wouldn't say, like everything stopped with him.
Yeah, well, that's a ridiculous premise.
To say that
a computer isn't a valuable tool for doing art is one of the most ridiculously pretentious things.
Well, that's like saying I give up on... art.
There's a lot of movie. Yeah, there's a lot of movie folks who are just like, oh, well, I won't see anything with CGI. And it's like, why?
Why?
Why? Why? That I won't see anything that's digital.
I won't see anything with sound.
Yeah, exactly.
It might as well be the same.
They're very into Celtic music. It's the only exception they make.
And you know, they're like, if you go back to that era, there are people that make resoundingly good arguments for, like, this is why sound is going to be a bad thing for movies, because of blah, blah, blah. And a lot of the points were very good, but it's just like, yeah, you're wrong.
Yeah. It's like, hey, there's those great silent movies hold up. They're wonderful.
Yeah.
But adding a new tool to the palette of an artist, in what way do you say, oh, that's ruined art?
Yeah, you know, for years, I'm saying years, decades, it's always people going like, ah, comics are just terrible now. There's no good comics. And I've always rejected that.
I'm like,
look, that you're just not looking hard enough.
Yeah.
And right now, with what Image is doing,
there's too many.
I went to go pick up some of the titles we were just talking about, and they gave me a free copy of Lazarus, which evidently is Greg Rucka's new one
I'm sorry.
Yeah, because okay, Lazarus and Velvet are like these other two comics that I love so much. I've been assuming that you guys have been reading them.
I just picked it up when I went to go pick up these other comics. He's like, oh, well, if you like Image, you'll probably like this. And I was like, done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in the 90s when, you know, arguably one of the worst points for the big two, but man, like, as far as underground stuff went and indie stuff, that was like such a feckin' time. I got into so many things at that point. And like, dude, like, even the offshoots of the big two, like Vertigo, were at their prime at that point.
Well, Dark Horse, before they start dick riding Star Wars, they were amazing.
There's always something to be had if you do enough investigation. And at this point, you don't even have to investigate, dude. You can practically walk into a comic book store and just, you know, bring your cat there and throw him.
Well, I think at any point when someone suggests that, like, the current generation doesn't have anything to offer, that's just lazy.
Well,
I was about to call you on that because you're the guy with music.
But then what it comes down to is, like, with art, you tend to be more passionate about stuff when you're younger.
Sure.
Like, where it's like, it's all new.
Yes.
You're very invigorated, but it's very exciting. You get older, you start going, like, Well, you know, I found that I enjoyed that stuff more. You did because of the context of when you were doing it. That's why you enjoyed it more. Not because it was necessarily better, because contextually, it was all you. It was all new experiences. Very exciting exploring all this. If you're closing yourself off to new stuff coming out because you're not getting the same thrill anymore, that's not the fault of the art.
No. True. And it's so much easier to, like, you know, I'm a hardcore music aficionado, I'm a hardcore film aficionado, you know, what have you. It's so much easier to do that when you're not making a mortgage payment, and you're not sending your kids to school, and you're sure. not, you know, on and on and on. And all the other stuff, it's just like, yeah, dude, it's just like, if you're paying, you know, $400 a month rent, and, you know, we're working in a, you know, welding studio as your quote-unquote day job. That's great, man. More power to you. But
if your day job is working in a welding studio, it's too late for you. You're a hipster. Sorry. I hate to throw that term around, but that's like on the resume right there. You're like, oh, I see you're a hipster.
A factory where they manufacture sparks.
No, that's 80s heavy metal bands. Anyway, I think that about wraps up for this episode of The Original Gentleman. Anybody else have anything they want to say?
Well, I don't know. I thought we'd go letter 44 now.
What? Do what?
What?
Well, Ashley brought up letter 44.
Oh, I thought we'd just save for the next one when everybody else got a chance.
Okay. Yeah. Letter 44 to come.
Yeah, letter 44. Wait, what? Oh, sorry.
You heard me. I'm sticking with my phrasing.
We got most of a bottle of Jim Beam. But you want to see if you're going to be low for a while?
Well, we got to give more of us a chance to read some of these books.
Okay,
sorry. We have a lot of comics to read and talk about in the next episode of The Original Gentleman, so expect more comics talk next week. Other than that, I don't know what's coming, but something.
Who cares?
We'll be back.
Tune in.